Hello, hello, welcome everybody. Today, before the show gets even started, let's talk about today's sponsor. Today's sponsor is Naked Warrior Recovery. Since I last talked to William around September 8th, I actually had to go to my website and check this out, because I totally forgot it was the last time we chatted. I've been using his energy drink, and if you actually are wanting to save even more money, go back and listen to that episode. It's round two with the Naked Warrior. And you'll get an even better promo code. But if you don't feel like doing it, you just want to get the product. I've been using his energy drink, pre-workout, intraday, just for whatever. It's like 75 milligrams of caffeine, full spectrum of good vitamins. And honestly, being a Navy SEAL, he's very literal. So when his title says Happy Berry, it tastes like a Happy Berry. Don't know even how you can taste the happiness, but it's just amazing. I've ridden up local mountains on two energy drink packets. It's just for those entrepreneurs, clerks, everyday people who are just getting that brain fog that can't see straight. This is that next level. So head on over to nakedwarriorrecovery.com or nw-recovery.com. Enter in the promo code JBOLTON for 20% off. He normally doesn't give this much off, by the way. It's maybe 10, 15%. 15 if he really likes you. So head over to Naked Warrior Recovery. Link and promo in the description. Oh, good. Okay, it's going through. All right, so second part after that. All right, today we have an awesome guest, Christian D. Evans. Awesome dude, super cool. We didn't even go into half the stuff that he went through. I was just mainly picking his brain on business and marketing and tactics and finding a right place. And we just kind of just have fun and chat. It's a awesome dude. Definitely gonna be a bit of a mind opener. Let's go.
Welcome to the Josh Bolton Show, where we dive into interesting and inspiring conversations. And now, your host, Josh Bolton.
There we go.
There he is.
There you go. Were you sitting there for a while? I apologize. I was.
No, it was like just like 2 minutes.
Oh, just 2 minutes. You're just staring at me.
I
apologize. But
I just went and changed my shirt. I was like, since he's still there.
Awesome, man. Hey, well, first of all, I really appreciate you letting me join on, man. Love what you're doing, and listen to a lot of your other stuff. So love what you got going on, man. So
thank you.
Excited and things, man.
Thank you. No, thank you for reaching out too. A lot of people for some reason in December just like, we're good.
I know. How was your Thanksgiving, man?
Oh, it was awesome. Went to the family out in Orange County, rode for like an hour with my cyclist uncle, burned at least like 800 calories trying to keep up with him. Jokingly told
him. Nice, right on.
Then jokingly
are you
told
Go ahead, bud.
Oh, I just jokingly told everyone carbs don't exist today, so enjoy.
That's awesome. How are you like doing a competition or something like that, or is that just something that you just enjoy?
I'm just competitive by nature.
nice, right on. What's your goal, doing like 500 miles or what?
So there's a local loop, the Tour de like Glendora or something. It's like 104 miles, but you like go up a mountain then come down, go into a different mountain, and so it's like just conditioning, get used to riding up hills and for like 100 miles.
Nice. Wow, that's impressive, man. Now, is this off like terrain kind of thing, like out in the boondocks, or is it all just like on a paved path?
Probably mostly paved. Just like trying to think of it. Yeah, it's like you're taking mostly surface streets. The mountain is
okay.
There's like paved road. It used to be a trucking route. How hard those hairpin turns are, I'm like, I don't know how the truckers made it up here.
They probably don't even know how either. They're like, man, this sucks. Oh, that's awesome.
Yep. So tell me a little about yourself. You were saying you run successfully a seven-figure business?
Yeah, so really simply, so I run several different businesses. And so one of the biggest things is like we focus on helping people, you know, from FBA, dropshipping, those businesses. And they've tried, they fail, they didn't know exactly what they were doing. And the thing is, we help them kind of basically implement a system to be able to produce results, right? And so we do a lot of the ads, we do the product, we do the back end fulfillment and stuff like that. And now really what I do is just teach and educate people on how to, you know, leverage these systems, how to simplify their business. I have a podcast as well. And then we talk about, you know, my niche are individuals that are like mid six figure to seven figure, and they want to scale to seven figure, and they want to figure out their operations, their systems, their processes. And so, yeah, it's been a lot of fun. And so that's kind of what I do now.
What's your podcast called?
It's actually Journey with Christian D. Evans podcast. So it's just a podcast that, we just talk about, you know, we have people on, CEOs, and we talk about their journey and where they were to where they're at, to where they're going. And obviously the ups and downs of it, but also, you know, intricate parts of operations and understanding how to, you know, get through the hurdles and obviously pivot definitely during this time, and how to find those opportunities, but also how to stay focused and laser beam focused on different projects. Because us entrepreneurs, we like to get sporadic and shenanigans like that.
Get so, like 15 different projects going at once, curse about half of them, only finish two.
Exactly. And so I just know like that's just the name of the game with entrepreneurs. And so it's like just staying laser focused, finding systems, and sometimes doing the boring stuff over and over and over again. But that's how you scale a successful business to higher, you know, growth.
Oh, 100%. So I'm curious. So I'm just hypothetical about your business. So if I called you after this and said, I want to work with you, we'd figure out, you said you'd source the product and ship it and marketing?
Yeah. So what we do is we actually have a lot of the contracts on the back end. So the fulfillment, the products, we already know what sales funnels already work and produce results. So we have like 10 or 15 different products that we already know produce results. We also know on the front end what marketing strategies, so Facebook, YouTube, that we implement. So what happens very simply is like it's a $5,000 to $6,000 on the front end, okay, depending upon the one-on-one mentorship and, you know, how involved you want us to be. We implement that whole process on the back end. When we help you scale to six figure and seven figure beyond, we take 6% of any of the revenue that you generate. So it creates a passive income for us as well. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah. I mean, you're doing like all the hard nitty gritty work, 6%, at least from my perspective, the inexperiencedness of this doesn't seem too bad.
No, not at all. And that's one of the reasons why it's like, we didn't want to take like 30 or 40% because it, you know, eats into the revenue. And obviously the biggest thing is we want them to scale big time. And I know just law of large numbers, 6% over 100 people that produces, you know, remarkable amount of revenue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it would be like, let's say the whole hypothetical and we get it going and figure out where I'm at. So I still personally take the 15% cut from Amazon and whatever cut from like Stripe or whatever to take the money kind of thing.
Yeah, correct. So what would happen is we would take 6% of any of the revenue. Everything else, we would obviously allocate and like, you know, hey, this goes to, you know, back into product and resource, right? This goes back into ad spend. This goes back into, okay, hey, how much is Square taken and Stripe taken and stuff like that. So correct. Go ahead.
Oh, so you actually have the perfect proportions. Like, oh, if you sell the little bamboo plant, as you can get $10 for it, but you're only really going to see like $3 after everything, right?
Well, correct. And so one of the biggest things that we focus on that we bring asset to the industry is that instead of trying to say, here's a product, let's find this product and let's try to sell it, we already know what product works and we just implement that. So we already have a sales funnel. We already have all the marketing strategy, the fulfillment on the back end. And so we just implement that whole strategy in. And so that's one of the biggest things that we bring into. And that's why people invest in X amount of dollars. Because a lot of times when you invest into a FBA or drop shipping or something like that, a course, they would say, okay, what you got to do is you got to find a product, right? Well, the thing is, as you and I understand, there's a lot of products that are really good and really not that good. And so what we've done is we've already done the, you know, heavy lifting. And to me, it's like, you're buying a McDonald's, right? McDonald's already knows what products work. They're not going to try to sell tacos because it doesn't work for their industry, right? And their niche. So So it's the same concept, right? So that's what I like to look at it and kind of, you know, as an analogy, if you will, is says, hey, we already know what works. We know what produces results. We just implement that strategy. And the biggest thing is we find people like yourself or people that are obviously entrepreneurial, that are ambitious, that are motivated, that are accountable, that want to scale. And the biggest thing is that they always have the phase one problem. The phase one problem is, you know, how do I do the techie stuff? How do I do the integration? How do I do the email, SMS marketing and the fulfillment and, you know, reaching out and the warehousing, the product, like all those small, like elementary questions instead of, you know, focusing on phase two to phase 10, which is, okay, how do I scale? How do I acquire more customers? How do I implement bigger systems, right? And, you know, those are the better questions. And sadly, so many people are never able to get to those better questions in their business because they've never able to get over that phase one problem. And that's where we kind of come in and assist them. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So I'm just curious because you say you got about 15 items. So let's say, do you have private labeling within all that? Like if I wanted to start selling my own jugs, would I just give you a call and say, hey, this is what I'm thinking. Can you do it?
A lot of times we focus on higher ticket items. So some of them may be physical products. Some of them, it may be also service-based products. Okay. And so, yeah, we could do a white glove. Yeah. White glove, or it could be more of a, you know, a white label kind of business structure. So it may be someone else's service and then we leverage it. And then we like, it's one of these strategies, like a YouTube ads training course. A lot of people are trying to figure out how to leverage YouTube. And so that service, okay, people are wanting to know, we can leverage that and sell that service as a high ticket. And a high ticket, I don't know if you're familiar with your industry is, but it's a higher income. It costs like $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 to get that training education. Okay, right. So people are willing to spend that because, of course, hey, you spend $2,000-$3,000. Well, that training can help you scale your business to several six figures. Does that make sense?
No, and I'm very familiar. That's where I was just thinking small trinkets like this. Would that be a smart or, yeah, the higher end ticket? You only need what, like one a month to barely pay everything. So,
well, that's correct. So one of the things that I always look at and that I always tell people is like, you want to focus your time and energy on higher ticket stuff just because on the front end, you know, with e-commerce, specifically on YouTube, you can do it on Facebook, but it's tough in e-commerce. Okay. Influencer marketing is probably the best strategy for e-commerce just because, you know, the cost to acquire a customer and the profit margins, depending upon what product it is, it's really just dependent because you really not, unless your sales funnel is really dialed in where, okay, you put a dollar in, you're making, you know, $4 or $5 in the back end. Wonderful. But e-commerce is a little harder just because the profit margins are a little bit, you know, less. Definitely after Stripe takes their portion, after, you know, fulfillment takes their portion, after, you know, the product costs and everything like that. So it's, you know, that's what I've noticed is that even though you scale to seven figures, right?
You're not actually making that.
Yeah, exactly. And we all know that. We get that. But it's just in high ticket, you can scale to seven figures a lot faster and quicker. And then as well as you can, you know, just shove more money into the whole system. And I noticed YouTube ads are one of the best ways to scale. They're the easiest ones to scale and just a better platform in general for ads right now.
That's actually one interesting thing. I had a guest on earlier in the year, like June, July, and his whole schmick is he teaches you how to make viral funny videos, like PC funny videos. And he's like, how we explain his metaphor, you put $20 into a vending machine, but you get 80 back. He's like, this is how my thing works. You put 20 in, but you make 80.
Correct. And that's what a lot of people don't understand with like direct response marketing. For example, a lot of people think, okay, hey, you have like venture capital, right? Okay. Hey, you build a business, you pitch people and say, hey, I need your money to keep going. Well, what's so beautiful about, you know, direct response marketing is once you understand a sales funnel, like you were saying, Josh, you spend a dollar, okay, in ad spend, you get $4, $5, $6, $7 in the back. And just like your guest was saying, now, how does that work? Well, what happens is you spend $1,000 in ad spend. Okay. You get a, let's say, for example, you know, 1,000 clicks, let's say, you know, a dollar per click. Okay.
Right.
30% conversion rate. Now we're getting into the weeds a little bit, but I think this is good. 30% conversion rate. So out of 1,000, that's 300 people that, opt in. Now, not all of them will schedule a phone call, really about 20% of those. So 20% of those, 78% will actually show up. So not all of them will show up. Mm-hmm. And then of course you want about a 30% close ratio. So going from cold audience to all of a sudden, hey, take my money. And that's the whole point of the sales funnel. And those are the actual metrics that you want to keep on, because if you don't know what's successful, then you don't know if that sales funnel is good. So if like your video sales letter, if there's only like 7 to 10% of people that are watching it and scheduling a phone call, then that means it's not the best video sales letter. You need to dial that in. You really want about 15 to 20, 25% of people that are going and watching your video actually schedule a phone call. And then as you scale, you can be a little bit more, you know, heavier on the criteria, as in like, hey, make sure, you know, how much money do you make? What do? Blah, blah, blah. Those certain pre-qualification questions to say, hey, I can't, you know, work with you because you don't make enough money or whatever it may be. So some of those pre-qualification questions, but that's kind of what that looks like. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah. No, I've noticed that with the podcasting, actually, as I book guests and I've just come to the point, I'm like, over the span of time, I'm like, I average about two people. So it's like, if I want to, I have to book four kind of thing. Cause half of them are just not going to show and not tell me why. So.
Well, yeah, and exactly. And so that's where you got to make sure like you're working with the higher ticket items, because then it helps you, you know, leverage, hey, you know, and just like you were saying as well, you just don't need as many to make, you know, 10, 12, 14, $100,000 a month, right? You just don't need as many. Now, one of the things is I really want to foot stomp a little bit is making sure that everybody always talks about increasing the price. But the thing is, you also have to make sure you have perceived value, right? Mm-hmm. So for example, and I think a lot of people understand this to some extent, but I want to make sure we dial this in. If I said, hey, you can buy a new Tesla, right? Tesla Roadster, that's, you know, worth, you know, $250,000 for $5,000. Well, why wouldn't you? Right now, all of a sudden, when you give them enough value, perceived value, holy shoot, yeah, I'm going to find out where can I get my $5,000 to be able to buy this $250,000, you know, vehicle, right? Well, that's the same concept that I look at in making sure, hey, when we raise our prices or, you know, whatever, making sure you have enough perceived value. So, and that's one of the reasons why, you know, I think marketers, definitely direct response, people are so good on the front end, but they really suck at the fulfillment. You want to make sure that you're really good at fulfillment on the back end, because then that's where you exponentially grow and just, you know, have organic growth, because, hey, Billy Bob, you've able to help him make an extra six figures in the bottom line. Holy shoot. He's going to refer new people to you. And that's where you exponentially grow. Does that make sense?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I'm just now thinking, I'm like, okay, what are, other than YouTube, what are some good platforms for ads? I'm thinking like Snapchat or TikTok, but I'm going to say TikTok naturally is just an ad. For it now.
Well, one of the strategies I noticed, like Snapchat, YouTube, Snapchat, LinkedIn, TikTok, they're good at retargeting. They're not the best at, you know, like direct, because they just don't have enough information and they don't have like the call to action like Facebook and YouTube and Instagram does. So they don't have like that sequence as much compared to, and even LinkedIn, their LinkedIn ads platform isn't the best either. I know that they're dialing that in a little bit. But I do know that like we just mainly focus on retargeting strategies on those platforms.
So would that just be take the information, punch it into the system and say retarget them for this?
Well, correct. So what you do is you take one of their little code. It's a code. You put it on the back end. And this is kind of where we come in handy with this. Yeah. But we take the code of each one of those platforms. We put it on the back end. And so when they visit those places on that web page, we can retarget them with a new ad. And so now we're getting in front of them all over the place. And so you probably have seen that as well. People are following you all over the internet. When you go to Fox News, when you go to CNN or something like that, boom, you're being seen everywhere. And like, who's this Billy Bob? Who's this Christian? Who's this Josh? Whoever it is. So that's a retargeting strategy. Now that's one of the best strategies to add like another 15, 20% to your bottom line, just from, you know, revenue.
Interesting. Yeah, I've noticed that. Like, I'm getting my teeth straightened out, so I went with Smile Direct Club, and they're just everywhere. And it's like, God, dang it! I just bought them. Calm down. Won't we buy it again?
Well, and that's fantastic to hear that they have a good remarketing and retargeting strategy. Now, have you? Do they email you and text message you as well in their campaigns or no?
Campaigns. So I'm a jerk. for email marketing. I have a filter. Anything unsubscribe, it throws in the trash. But yeah, they target me like crazy. They only text me for like notifications of like a delivery. So
yeah, yeah, definitely. Well, that's incredible because see, that's it's really cool to see those kind of retargeting strategies that actually work, even in that industry. And again, that's a good high ticket item right there. Now, I don't know if they schedule a phone call. I don't know what that sequence looks like, but that's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah. I just pretty much had to buy mold and do their little thing, send it in. That was the start of the sequence. And the how like 20, 30 steps later, I got my stuff and now they just leave me alone. Well, other than constantly hitting me up on Instagram.
Yeah. Yeah. And see, that's one of the things I really always want to share with you, because see, what we have to understand is that we don't own Facebook and we don't own YouTube, right? They're just platforms. Now we understand that, but also one of the things is this retargeting pixel is an asset. So for example, you have a lot of people that maybe, you know, went through your website, learned and educated or whatever, and they didn't schedule a phone call. Now, also one of the biggest things is that they may not be in the situation where they want to buy now. They're just looking, right? And that's okay. So what you do is you constantly retarget them. It costs very, very little to retarget them. Mm-hmm. But also what's nice is that you can retarget them with different offers as well. So you can always pivot and say, hey, you know what? Maybe you don't want a, you know, a straight, you know, braces. Maybe you want a teeth whitening. Maybe you want this. Maybe you want that. Whatever it is, well, all of a sudden you can retarget them. And now you can upsell them. And then there's all different strategies. So understanding these technical details, it's very, very important because, you know, you can be all over the internet and really scale your business just from implementing those other extra little tidbits in your business.
100%. So you were saying white glove as a service for Amazon, or was that just like, is that more of a personal website for the high ticket item?
Yeah. So white glove would be for like, for the YouTube. So we have someone that actually has a YouTube course. Okay. And we go in there and sell that YouTube course to those individuals and they're high ticket. And so what that is just, it's a white glove. So it's not ours, but we're leveraging it. And they said, yeah, go ahead. And so we have high ticket people close it. And then we're making sure we're making money on the front end as well. So we may add maybe a little extra few little details like inner circle meeting and one-on-one mentorship, or maybe even, you know, our team doing that integration for them. But why that's important is because now we have that process implemented. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. I was just sitting here. I'm like, okay, I'm like, I don't remember being able to sell like ad class on Amazon, at least yet.
Yeah. Well, no, not on Amazon, but obviously, like, you know, people are learning how to leverage YouTube as well as Facebook. Now, Facebook, there's a lot of ad content out there, but leveraging YouTube is a whole nother animal and understanding, okay, what are the targeting options? What are the strategic, you know, tags and codes on the back end to make sure everything's integrated properly so you can leverage YouTube at a high capacity? Because right now, YouTube is really, really beautiful, definitely in the e-commerce as well as the service base. Because they're actually warmer individuals, okay? So, and what do I mean by this is they're people that are actually looking and searching, right? You and I know Facebook is more interruption marketing. YouTube and Google, they're search platforms. So people are literally in pain and they're looking for a solution and they're trying to find a problem, right? They're trying to find the solution for that problem. And so that's where we come in and say, hey, you know what? We get our ad in front of you. So Josh, you know, you were probably Googling or at some point, you know, teeth whitening or something like that line, you know, or teeth something, right? Well, guess what? We got our ad in front of that person, you. And again, you became a lot closer and a lot warmer. So we didn't have to sit there and try to interrupt your pattern to come over here and buy something because it's cool. It's more of, hey, you're already looking for it. And now we can get in front of that person and there's a better result in that regard for yourself and for us as well.
Okay. Yeah. And for the teeth thing, like I said, I already bought it and I'm just getting a ton of ads, but I'm like, I just bought your $2,000 item. Do you want me to buy it again? Kind of thing.
Right.
No, and I did. I actively looked it up and I knew it too going in to their website. I'm like, they're going to totally retarget me for ads because I'm a new user. So it's like they hit them hard.
Well, and it's not that expensive to do retargeting. And as you can see, there's, you know, different strategies. One that I always teach is testimonials. Two is just more like a different offer. And three is just like the same thing, saying the same thing in the video and getting a call to action. Hey, schedule a phone call, and overcoming that fear of like, okay, why didn't you purchase it? Right. One of the things I always figured out, and people respect you when you do this in marketing, when you tell them, hey, for some reason, you know, you didn't schedule a phone call. For some reason, you didn't purchase this item. And it's probably because you're skeptical, probably because you don't know who I am, probably because of this, right? And you hit those fear because guess what? That's what they're struggling with. The reason why they didn't buy and they didn't purchase something is because they don't trust you, is because they don't see the value in it, or because they're skeptical, right? And you overcome those objections. And, you know, that's what's so beautiful about YouTube and Facebook. YouTube specifically, because it's more video. Video. If you're really good on video, people can relate to you a lot easier. Definitely if you're really good at storytelling and stuff like that. But again, I'm big proponent on YouTube. And the reason why is just because it's just beautiful right now, specifically in ads, but also in the Facebook and LinkedIn strategy as well, because then you can follow them all over the internet. But those are just different strategies that I recommend to be able to make sure, hey, you're optimizing every part of your sales funnel and process.
Yeah. Okay. 6% is easy. Just take it kind of thing. I'm just listening to your stuff. I'm like, I have a mentor call every like Thursday, and he does this. He more talks about the 4-day email strategy where, wow, something I got really twitchy. Where you first day is like, oh, here's the offer reminder, last chance. And he's like, you switch it. And you introduce something new, and the fourth day is like, this is it, do or die if you don't do it. And he's like, it always works. And I'm like, well, what's your percentage? He's like, all right, 90% of the time I get a conversion. I'm like, okay, I can kind of see where he said it always works, but.
Well, see, that's where it's, you know, you have to have, and to me, it's about simplifying a system, right? Mm-hmm. So many of us, you know, definitely in a lot of businesses, they don't focus on like simplifying it. So when they go from your YouTube ad, you want to make sure that you're gathering their email. Okay. So then you can retarget them. And then those that obviously don't schedule a phone call for whatever reason, or those that do and they don't show up, now you have their phone number. So we do 30-day email sequence as well as a 15-day text messaging sequence. And that just helps getting in front of those people all the time. Now, what happens is all the call to action always in that sequence is schedule a phone call, talk to one of my account managers, have a conversation, right? Now, my account managers, they're close, right? They close people and have a conversation, and they identify their pain problems and overcome that and say, hey, this is the best solution. Let's rock and roll, make this happen. So that's what that looks like a little bit. Now, what you were just saying as well is that there's just so many different marketing techniques that are extraordinary, definitely email. Now, text messaging, I love text messaging because people just open it up, right? Email, it's tough. You can still leverage it. But one of the things I always look at is you got to make sure you're tracking those numbers and seeing what hook is the best, what subject line is the best, what's producing the best result. Because otherwise, you know, you're going to just keep sending out emails and it's not doing anything. But it does work definitely if you put them in like a 30, 40-day email sequence and do something, you know, intriguing. And then as well as text messaging, leveraging those text messages, because you go directly to that call to action and keep the text message relatively short and simple. Those are some strategies that I've implemented, just like your mentor was saying, that has helped making sure, hey, you have another 10, 15, 20% of people schedule a phone call, and it really increases the bottom line in your revenue.
So then let's just say I'm thinking of doing a coaching class for business owners to lead with empathy. And I'm not sure the sequencing or marketing. So I already have the pricing and the demographics. I would be like, I book a call with you and be like, this is what I want to do. And we see what we can do from there.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so what happens is we come in here and we already know what works in the sales funnel, right? And then what we do is we integrate the techie stuff with the YouTube ad and the Facebook ad. We develop that. We already know what works and produces results. So we already know what creates, you know, okay, clicks, conversions, stuff like that, which is awesome. And then what happens is your responsibility is looking on a week-to-week metrics, making sure, hey, what are these metrics looking like? How do I scale? Like I said, the phase 2 to phase 10, which is, okay, better questions, right? How do I scale? How do I build? How do I grow? What's my cost to acquire a customer? Certain KPIs that you really need to understand on a business. And this, I really want to hone in on this because as business owners, right, and definitely individuals that are aspiring business owners, they don't focus on the KPIs, the key performance indicators, metrics that you want to keep measuring on a week to week basis. Because if you don't know your numbers, and this is something that one of my mentors said, if you don't know what winning looks like, then how do you know you're winning? Right? If you don't identify what winning is, then you're never going to, you never feel like you're winning. And so one of the things is you have to understand, okay, what's your cost to acquire a customer? What's your cost for fulfillment? What's your lifetime value of that customer? What that is, what that's costing? What's your churn rate? Making sure, hey, people are sticking with you. Now, some healthy numbers that you want to stick with, cost to acquire a customer is irrelevant when you're putting in a dollar in and you're making $4 or $5 in the back end. Because obviously I can spend more money now. Right. If I put $100,000 in and I made $500,000, right? Or I put $1 million in and now I made, $5 million, right? That's the concept of, hey, putting a dollar in, making $5 in the back end. Now that becomes, like you said, a vending machine that's just constant producing. Now, is it as simple as that? No, of course, because you have growth pains, you have fulfillment, you have things like that and all that other structure. But is it that process implemented? Yes, 100%. So one of the things that I always tell people very simply is like, okay, hey, you have this system, you have this process. Okay, wonderful, fantastic. Now, how do you scale it, right? Well, once you have the fulfillment, and one of the things I always focus on is like three phases. One, you got to focus on cash flow. Okay, do you have a lead system? Because a lot of people want to talk about brand, talk about my legacy, talk about, blah, 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 right? People don't care. You have to develop lead generation and you have to create cash flow. So focus on sales, phase one, period. If you do not have sales, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50,000 a month coming in, guess what? It's irrelevant. You got to focus on it. Phase two, that's where we can start dialing in your marketing message a little bit. Okay. So maybe creating some content. Phase three, this is where you should be at like high six figures, seven figures. Then you can start focusing on brand awareness, which is more podcasting, which is more strategic partners, JV partners as well. So those are the three phases that I always recommend. And sadly, like I said, a lot of marketers, we overcomplicate it and we like to focus on brand and we like to focus on content creation, all this stuff. And don't get me wrong, that's fantastic, but it takes income and it takes cash flow to get everything running at that high capacity. You think about Gary Vee, he's got a whole team doing content production. Now, does his content production work? Of course it does, 100%. I am not ignorant that it doesn't, right? It definitely does. But my thing is, he's got a huge team doing it and he's paying top dollar for it. Now, where does that money come from? Well, he's got other systems over here that are bringing in consistent cash flow so then he can go do that. And so that's what I always suggest people. Sometimes we want to hit, I'm going to just create a whole bunch of content and post 1,000 times. Well, guess what? And you're wondering why it doesn't produce anything. Well, because guess what? You don't have a consistent cash flow over here. And that's what I highly recommend. That's why I love YouTube ads instead of organic stuff. I like YouTube ads and ads in general because it's more consistent in that flow. And then like I was saying in the metrics, making sure on a week-to-week basis, you understand what is your metrics and you're measuring those on a consistent basis. That's something that was not my personality that I had to really get used to, and just making sure that, on a week-to-week, monthly basis, year-to-date, as well as, year-to-year growth, just seeing where we were at and where we were going.
Oh, 100%. Like all this, like I've heard it, and I'm sure like half the people that are just listening in are like, what the hell did they just talk about? That's what I'm very aware of it. And with your comment with Gary Vee, it's like, he says, just make like you said, like 1,000 pieces of content a day and you'll succeed. It's like, well, you also have like 20 editors and like social media people. There's only one of us.
Right. Yeah, correct. And that's one of the things that I like. And one of the things I also want to share with people in the marketing industry, and like people, don't be afraid to ask for the sale, right? So many of us, we want to just like add value like so much, and that's fine. But also you have to understand that you actually do a disservice if you know that you can produce, you can produce results for your client and you don't ask for them, hey, do you want me to do that for you, right? It's okay to ask for the sale. It's okay to ask for a client. So many of us were creating content and producing all this stuff, and then we're sitting there in the poorhouse because we don't have any money or any cash flow, right? And so that's what I suggest is like, yeah, create content, wonderful, add value, cool, but also ask for the sale, because you also do a disservice if you're not helping them take action and moving forward with their life.
Oh, 100%. I learned that when I was selling martial arts, It's whether you like it or not, you're going to get a lot of no's. Just keep asking. And eventually, hopefully it pans out. And yeah, that was the hardest one for my personality to get over, was like, oh, but I'm not worthy of asking for the sale. And my instructor and like my actually like other mentor, he's like, they don't give a shit that you're asking. They'll give a shit if you're asking too much, though. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah. And it comes down to when you're doing that, it comes down to like, you know, self-esteem and self-confidence issues, right? You know, if you don't feel, hey, you know what, I have a really good value, I know what I'm worth and I know what I'm capable of. And it's remarkable when you have those two things, self-esteem, self-confidence, you know what you're worth, you know what you're capable, and you know where you're going. All of a sudden people, it's like they get attracted to that because you have this, you come into the room and you say, hey, this is who I am. This is where I'm going, right? If you ever listen to, you know, Donald Trump speak or Gary Vee or any entrepreneur, right, that you know, are very direct. They're very direct individuals, right? They say, this is it. This is where it's going. And they're very black and white, right? If you ever listen to, they're not afraid to say, no, you're wrong. I disagree with you. Boom, this is what it is, right? And the reason why is because, not because of passion, but because they're leaders. And, you know, like you said, they have high self-confidence, high self-esteem that help them understand their value and understand what they're capable of doing. And so I think that's interesting that you mentioned that in that regard.
Well, back then, now that you add self-esteem, that made more sense. I was a much bigger boy back then. And like the only thing I could like hold to call mind was martial arts. So it's like, I don't have any right to sell to these people kind of thing. And then once my instructor / mentor told me that, actually, I'm still trying to figure out why I quit that job, but it was like, I was pulling in like 500-600 a week. And I think it was like, it's time to get a real job kind of thing, Josh. But yeah. And once I don't know, it was just kind of like the, oh, when it comes to sales, I'm not me. I'm the guy on the corner just randomly yelling at people to get a sale. I guess that's how I put it together now during that low self-esteem point.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, I mean, what helped you get through that and increase your self-esteem? Because I know martial arts and a lot of that karate and stuff like that, that actually helps people's, you know, self-esteem, self-confidence, self-worth. So at what point did you start realizing your value and increasing that self-esteem, if you will?
It was my closing rate. It was like out of 10, I'd close like 6. So it was just one of those, like, that was, I just sat there. I'm like, apparently I have something. And it's not because I was super self-conscious about my teeth and my weight. Like, apparently they don't actually care about that. It's whatever I'm presenting to them.
Mm-hmm. So something triggered, you realize, and that's very interesting that you mentioned that. So something triggered where it wasn't, you thought it was this that they were worried about, but in fact, what they want is the result of what you do. Mm-hmm. And obviously explaining that. Okay. What were some other strategies that helped you close at 6? Were you just more personable, more empathetic because of your situation as well?
Or? I was super empathetic. Pretty much like one client I had, they came in, their life was going to hell. The kid was a demon. No joke. Mm-hmm. He was like Satan spawned, going everywhere. He was breaking all the katanas and stuff. And I just sat there and I said, do you ever discipline your child? When the mom sat back, no. I said, well, if you bring him here, you pay the monthly, whatever, $200 at that time. That was a lot back then. I can guarantee you, you're a kid, even if we're in the middle of a lesson, someone somewhere will discipline them and bring the fear of God into him.
Well, I love what you're saying there because, see, this is a really good example. So many of us in marketing, right? Martial arts, if you think about it, what you were selling wasn't martial arts. What you were selling was the result of what martial arts created. Mm-hmm. And so if you understand that in marketing, right, people don't care about your benefits and features. Hey, you get one-on-one, you get this, you get that, you get free food. Nobody really cares about that, right? What do they really care about? Hey, it helps your kids, your ADHD kids, become more disciplined. Oh my gosh, do you have crazy kids that are going crazy and there's no discipline? Well, that's what this does, right? And so what's so beautiful, what you just said, is you found the pain point of that parent. That pain was, oh, my kid is going nuts. And you just asked a simple question and you found the solution. Well, this is what we do. Do you want us to help you with it? And I love how you approach that because at the end of the day, that's what sales is. You identify the problem, say, hey, I understand that. That sucks. Do you want out of it? Wonderful. We can help you with that. And so that's how you were able to really identify it. So what, give me another good example of how you're able to just, you know, be empathetical, listen, and identify their pain, and obviously find the solution, which was the martial arts.
So actually, the reason this one was so easy for me, because it was like looking into myself, a younger version. Mm-hmm. Kid had two moms. I didn't really give a shit about that. One of them was just smoking hot, though. That's where I jokingly told him, like, damn, if you were just willing to switch it for a day or two. But the kid was just sheepish. Like, he'd hugging behind the mom's leg. He'd like sneak his head around his mom's hips and be like kind of thing and then hide. And I think they just walked in. I just essentially said, hey, do you want some pajamas and to punch some stuff? I'm like, you'll be a cool ninja today. My instructor looked at me, immediately knew what I was doing, grabbed some stuff, threw it at the kid. They got him in. By the end of it, the kid had so much self-esteem and self-worth. And I just told the parents, I'm like, I can do this for you. They signed up for the two lessons instead of one a week. So I said, I can do this twice a week, get his self-esteem up. He's welcome to come in every stinking day for the next 30 days to all the classes. Mm-hmm. And by the end of it, the month that we gave him the trial and all that, they pretty much said, sign us up for the $400 package, not the $200 one. Because they're like, instantly see the results of this kid. And I was just, and they're like, how'd you do it? I'm like, I just saw me and the kid. I was just speaking to him.
Mm-hmm. And see, what I love about what you said is you just built a friend, right? That's really what it came down to. You saw you in that, and you wanted that result for them. And you just, you know, we're empathetic. I think empathy is really, really awesome. Definitely if you understand their perspective and identifying their pain, I think it's just an awesome, awesome experience. Because that's really what marketing is, right? Understanding, mm-hmm. okay, whatever strategy you have, whatever product you have, right? Understanding, okay, hey, people are in a lot of pain. And you identify, okay, well, what is your solution? At the end of the day, one of the best best examples when someone's talking about this, you know, like for example, when Home Depot, when they market about like a drill, they always talk about the features of it, the benefit, right? And it makes the guy feel good. But one of the things is when a man goes to Home Depot, it's not that he wants to have a hammer to put a nail in the wall, right? Even though that's the result of what the hammer does. What he really wants is a beautiful picture that makes his wife happy. And that's the reason why he's going to put the nail in the hole. And so what happens is you go two or three deep, you know, depths into it in marketing and the subconscious and truly understand, you know, why do they want the hammer? What is the result that they want? And like you said, what I love about what you're doing there, if people listen and understand what Josh was doing, he got in the subconscious and really understood. I mean, even though you weren't trying to upsell them,
no,
the 200 to 400, they did it anyways. Why? Because they saw fulfillment, right? Which is the result of what you did, and it created very quickly, which is awesome. And so just dialing in again, understanding your niche and then dialing that in, and that may be your niche. Maybe it just might be parents that have ADHD kids, right? Well, or special needs or something like that.
That was totally my thing at the end. Like my instructor was just giving other like good looking or this or high paying. I didn't give a shit about them. Like literally this one time, I love how my instructor says, he's like, oh, we have an autistic. Perfect. I have the perfect guy for you. Cause this guy like literally just knows how to talk to them. And that's where another one instantly sell up. Cause the kid was happy. They were like, the old, let us think about it for a week. Kind of thing and talk it over. The kid wouldn't stop talking about his new instructor and friend. And then they're like, okay, well, how much do we need to pay? They're like, done.
Well, see, that's what I think is so awesome, because see, and again, you dialed in the niche, right? So you didn't have to talk to, you know, hot women or young women or, you know, young moms or like anything. No, it was, this was my niche. These are the parents that, you know, have those individuals. And you knew that audience in and out so well that you could just relate to them. And I think that's awesome. I love it, dude. I love it. That's awesome.
Yeah. And I was back when like, well, I think part of the reason I used the tactics I did the way I did is my instructor, when how he got me, like I said, bigger boy. I was at the LA Fair, had my funnel cake and the extra sugar and my 32-ounce big Dr. Pepper. And he just got back getting his funnel cake, put it down. And he told me afterwards, he's like, I saw some rage in your eyes that was unquenchable and you needed to put it somewhere. And he's like, I literally had no intention of selling you. I just wanted you to punch a bag for 30 minutes. I was worried you can attack the people on the road.
That's awesome. That's awesome. It's because, I mean, to see that result in those people's lives. And like you said, I mean, just having that conversation with them. And like you said, just saying, hey, just go ahead and do this, you know. And one of the things that I love about martial arts is it just take action, right? It's it's not information. It's not education. It's more of, hey, just go in there. We'll worry about the technique later, but just go in there and use your energy. And then of course we can go from there. But once you start taking action, do you find that very similar as well?
Oh, you nailed it. Cause like when I first did it, I joke with my instructor now, cause he's recently got some higher end ticket people that are hardcore. And I told him like, oh, you didn't come when I joined. My purple belt was an 8-hour Navy SEAL workout. And he was coming in with like batons, taking out the back of my knee. And they looked at him and I'm like, and his wife that works in the studio is like, I'm surprised you still have customers. He's like, and we did out the week, honey. It's okay.
That's awesome. That is awesome. That's funny.
But yeah, that's where I told him like, yeah, he's much calmer now, for legal and insurance reasons.
Yeah. They have to sign a legal document that says, hey, if you get injured or something, it's not my fault. You know,
if your instructor randomly attacks you with a spear, it's okay.
That's but good.
That's the thing I told him though. I said, he's calmer now. But I said, yeah, back then, even for me, it was hard to keep my students because of how I niched down. Because he'd run the class like a Navy SEAL workout for 1 hour. And then he's wondering why everyone's quitting the next day. I'm like, can you just be a little bit nicer? Just a little bit, sir.
And so what's interesting is that, see, because your guys' personality, right, he attracts a different personality, right? Obviously a high intense, you know, whatever. And then you attract a different personality, which is fantastic. Both of you are needed because, of course, it at the end of the day, it's martial arts. But that's what I love about marketing. As long as you identify, okay, hey, martial arts is not about martial arts, right? What your product is not about your product. It's about the result of what that product creates. And if you identify it, you can talk to anybody. Right. You really can. You can identify, you know, African-American women that have two kids that are single mother. Boom. That's a different target market than, let's say, men that have, you know, that are, you know, entrepreneurial, that are young, that are vibrant, that have, you know, making, you know, six figures or whatever. Right. Whatever it is. And so you just dial that in. And just like you said, you have a different story and leveraging your story, your experiences for the benefit of your client and attracting that. I think that's awesome.
Oh, yeah. And near the end, he caught on to what I was doing. So if you saw my students in another group class, he's like, all right, nicer today.
That's good. That's good. That's awesome.
But yeah. It's just, that's how I've always been. I had this unfortunate series of things, like a domino effect. Essentially, like when I was in elementary school, this is 90s before the internet was built out the way it is. Like if my parents actually had the internet the way it is today back then, none of this would happen. But I was ADHD. I was the spastic kid. There was nothing crazy, but they're like, oh, he's schizophrenic. So either you put him on meds or he's getting the heck out. He's not allowed back. So they didn't have options. So they took the meds. But that's where, because I was on meds, I was considered special needs. And they put me in a special needs group. And I always felt out of place. I'm like, why am I here? I'm like, I mean, I'm a little spastic, but I'm not like stupid. Mm-hmm. And near the end, that's where it was explained to me. And that's where literally when I was doing martial arts, I sat there. I'm like, everyone in my classes, when I was in the special needs class, I would just talk to them and I'd accidentally upsell them on something because of just sheer empathy.
Well, see, with that, in that regard, do you still take, and if it's okay, if you don't want to answer this, it's a personal question, but do you still take medication have you been able to leverage the martial arts and that discipline to be able to control that?
So there's actually, that's a very good question. I've been clean for 3 years. Funny story with that, a professional Indian doctor would never say a bad word in his time, like to a client at least. And I come in and I bump around, I sign up and I sit down. And what I was taking was essentially like legal speed. So I'm like sitting here like this, not sure what to do with myself. And he pretty much said, "Josh, do you remember coming into this building?" I'm like, "Well, sort of, like, I kind of remember." He's like, "Do you remember specifically the doorknob? It's very unique. You can't forget it." I'm like, "No." He's like, "The drugs are messing with your brain completely." He's like, "I'm surprised you're not mush." He's like, "You really need to get off this shit." And that's when it hit. I'm like, "Oh, I just went cold turkey that day."
Well, and that's interesting because I was going to ask you, at what point did you realize that? And so what have you noticed? Like, because, you know, that's what I always found interesting is in the medical industry is that they try to medicate, right? Mm-hmm. There's something wrong with you. We got to give you medication, blah, blah, blah. But I do find, at what point did you start leveraging martial arts as more of the disciplinary aspect? Was it, you know, throughout that process? And then you obviously, you know, got off the medication and then went all in with the martial arts, or what did that look like?
Pretty much. Like, actually, I joke with my instructor, and I still do to this day. I said, the day he picked me up and actually got me to sign up, well, we did that free lesson. I would say 6 months earlier, I actually tried to take my life. I mean, now I realize I just knocked myself out because I was trying to hang myself with a belt. So I just passed out. But that's where I was just sitting there like, "Oh, that didn't work," kind of thing. And kicking around. But yeah, the meds just made me completely emotional and alphabet soup without the alphabet. And with martial arts, it was the consistency. So when I was transitioning, even my instructor noticed, he's like, "You're learning things quicker now. They're sticking faster." So I actually got my black belt, and then I just recently got my second degree black belt in 3 years.
Wow. And that's just crazy to hear that story. First of all, I appreciate you being authentic and sharing that. That's pretty intense. Was it because of the medication that caused you to that point and that depression, if you will? And you like, you know, and who helped you through that process? You said you had a mentor?
It was Alan, my instructor. One of these, I need to figure out how to get him on a show. But yeah, it was just the 6 months I just decided, you know what? Like, kind of like passed out near death experience feeling, just waking up like, "Oh, that was stupid." I didn't try anything dumb for like 6 months, but that's where like the LA Fair came up and I was like, "Oh, I'll go." And that's where I jokingly told him, like, because I was contemplating it again. I was like, "Should I just commit this time? Like, just take a shit ton of aspirin and just never wake up again?" But that's what I told him, like, "No, you saved me." And you've also, even if I survived all that, I said, I'd probably be in juvie because I'm constantly fighting. I couldn't put my rage somewhere. So I'd be putting in people's faces.
And so now on the, because I understand martial arts can help not just the mind, but also the body, but the mind and the mind. And so how have you found like martial arts? Were you able to really start knowing yourself a little bit better? Were you able to really like, "Oh, I understand my patterns. I understand my thought processes. I understand what causes certain things and how do we discipline?" Tell me a little bit more, you know, intricately how that has helped you.
It really helped me realize I didn't know it back then, how competitive, but very analytical I was. I didn't have a chart or anything like this. It's just, I could see someone and be like, "Okay, their shoulders are here, their head's here, but they're moving it. This is going up a little. So that means they're going to punch with this hand," kind of thing. And it was just one of those. I always thought it was normal, but my instructor's like, "No. Most normal people don't think like that. They can't see patterns to that caliber you're seeing." So that's where I just honed in on that. And that's at one point my instructor was joking. He's like, "Man, we should have put you in UFC. You would have whooped everyone's ass."
Do you still think of doing UFC?
Oh, I got a neck injury. Essentially, if I just get tapped on the side, like the ear, I'm like paralyzed for like 2 minutes.
You're serious?
Crippling pain. I can't move.
Oh, dang.
Ironically, a Josh hurt a Josh. So,
oh, gracious. But that's, so tell me a little bit more about like, obviously, you know, the discipline of the mind. Do you meditate at all to help you calm that mind and focus, and, or
not actively, not like in lotus position going home, but like we, for me, I've come to realize for me, like sparring people is like my meditation. Cause if I engage my brain in any way, it throws everything off. So I just sit there and I just think in the moment, like enjoy what's going on. And yeah, for me, it's silly to say, but it's like a runner's high. You can only focus on running. And if you even look for a second, you could fall and scrape everything kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It's the same for fighting.
Well, see, and that's a very interesting concept because see, I know in business, right? I think we were talking a little bit about this. It's about flow, right? It's about this focus, this intense focus. And when you're really good at that, then you can really dial in. See, a lot of people, definitely entrepreneurs, we like to focus on, okay, the sexy thing. I'm learning, I'm growing, right? But what I always found interesting is like definitely when you start like martial arts or anything, right? Any skill, you learn. There's a big growth trajectory. Man, I'm learning. But then it feels like it plateaus because it's small, intricate details now. And that's where you know, okay, hey, how do I dial those little 2%, 3%, 4%? And that's where it gets boring, honestly. A lot of people don't see the constant massive growth, right? A building of muscle, building the mind, building of these small little intricate details. But then all of a sudden, what I've noticed is that you go through that period of time, and that may, I don't know how long that is for some people, but then all of a sudden it becomes an exponential growth because now you're able to really dial in a lot of these skills. And just like you said, you can find patterns that other people don't see, even though they've been in the industry, but because you've been doing it for a long time. And I find that very interesting. Would you agree with that?
Oh, and 100%. And that's one thing, actually, my instructor, I was like, when I got like the after the 8-hour Navy SEAL workout one test, he pretty much said statistically, half of you going to quit after this belt. And he's like, only like 1% of you can actually make it a black belt. And I sat there, classic, like anime character, just like, I'll screw through you, old man. I'm doing it. I'm not getting the black belt. I also told him recently, I'm like, I wanted to fight you, but he's like, no, that's a, as a martial artist, you'll understand. That's a little too intimate of a situation.
So what helped you get through that? Was it a lot of mental or was it physical to the 8-hour?
It was mental. A lot, like even my second degree one, I almost flopped it at the end, actually. They essentially have you hold a squat, but he had us hold a squat for 1 hour.
Gracious. And how did you get through that?
I just sat there and I said, I just have to do this. Doesn't matter how long, even if I'm bumbling like an idiot, just keep going.
Do you, during that time, do you focus on other things to distract you or do you just focus on breathing or what helps you get through that?
For that, it was strictly just mental. Like I'm focusing on the situation right in front of me. It was super tunnel vision. The head instructor, like the owner of the company, was even yelling at me like, Josh, what are you doing? I actually turned up and looked at him and said, I don't recognize your face, sir, right now. I'm that focused. And he's like, pretty much they had me, the owner and my instructor taught. He's like, you literally wrecked him right out of the gate. He couldn't focus. He's like, but he's the kind of person, he just doesn't turn off. He goes to like 1% for dimmable lights. So he's like, he's not off, but you can't really see that he's on or off. He's just surviving at this point. So
that's interesting.
And that's just how it's always been.
Yeah, because I had a friend that did a 100-mile race, and he was telling me about, you know, in order to do that, right, you know, obviously you train, but training can only get you so far. Once you actually get there, it is a lot of mental, right? I mean, you feel the burn on your feet, you feel the burn, the pain, the frustration, your body is totally rejecting everything. But yet, like you said, your mind says, quit, it hurts. But then obviously you just keep going. And one of the things that he told me is you don't focus on the longevity. You just focus on one step. And you keep doing that. Then all of a sudden you've done 100 miles, right? Mm-hmm. And I love that approach because see, in business, right, we all have big goals and dreams and ambitions. And don't get me wrong, you have to have BHAGs, right? Big, hairy, audacious goals. And I get it, right? That makes sense. But also one of the things that you have to really dial in is like, you know, understanding your metrics, right? You probably have metrics, realizing, okay, weekly goals, dreams, commitments that you really want to accomplish. And you dial that in, you focus on, okay, I can't control yesterday. I can't control tomorrow, but what I can do is I can control today. So I may have missed, you know, I might have eaten potato chips the other day, or I might have missed my workout, or I might have missed a business goal. That's okay. Today, I'm going to do what I can do and obviously focus on that. And what I've learned is like, okay, dialing in those big, and again, it's like, it makes sense logically, but most of us just don't do it. And that's the difference between knowledge versus wisdom, right? Exactly what you said. Out of, you know, 100 people in that class, 90% of them, only 1% will actually get the black belt. And that's not that they can't do it. It's just that mentally they're not prepared and ready to do it, right? And that's what I always find interesting in today's world, is that that's really what it comes down to. See, probably some other people were more physically in shape, or maybe they were doing all these other things. But at the end of the day, it's all about mental. And if you can just say, hey, you know what? I'm going to stay laser freaking focused, and I'm not going to focus on, oh man, a whole hour. How many more minutes? Oh my gosh, 59 minutes, 58 minutes, right? It's the whole concept. Just, you know, I'm going to focus on right now. And I'm going to just focus on what I can do. And you'll be amazed at what your body and what, you know, what you're capable of doing. You probably hurt, but it probably got to.
It was like 3 days afterwards, me and one of the guys, they were like jumping different directions. So if I turned, I could see the form. Cause I was gone. Like I couldn't remember anything at that point. And that's where he even texted me like 3 days later. He's like, why do I still hurt?
Well, see, and what I find interesting, let me ask you this, you know, did it get to a point where, okay, it was hurting. And then it got to a point where it became numb, where you didn't even notice the pain anymore and you just ignored it. And then afterward, once you actually allowed your brain to realize, you know, like once you got up after the hour, then the pain, you know, re-engaged.
Yeah.
Or was it hurting the whole time?
I mean, we completely shot our legs right out of the gate. But yeah, other than that, no, it just kind of just went numb. I didn't even notice it. But yeah, I take CBD. So I had to take like 2 shots of my dad's stuff. I'm like, dude, this is going to be brutal.
That's awesome.
But yeah, it went numb, like nothing. It was, I think that was like the 2.5 hour point. It was like a 5.5 hour test. I didn't even notice the pain. I was excruciating. Like this one old guy, I'm actually kind of glad I worked with him. Hits like a freaking mule. He was a bodybuilder back in Schwarzenegger's time, but he was a natural, not a steroid user bodybuilder. And dude, like, I was 280 during the test. He picked me up with one hand, like I was nothing. He dropped me. But he hit me a few times in the back of the neck. And that's where I was mentioning earlier, if I get hit there, crippling pain. But I didn't even notice. It was one of those, like, I felt the initial shock and I was like, okay. And I went back down to the push-up position.
That's awesome. But I think I just respect, you know, I've never been in martial arts. I've just studied a lot of that. And I do find it's very similar to business, right? And entrepreneurship and building that and developing disciplines and things like that. And just like we were talking about on all different strategies, marketing and business and how it relates and identifying the growth and then just staying consistent with it. And then it becomes exponential growth. And it's just consistency over and over and over. And a lot of people, they hit that momentum, and a lot of people don't ever hit that consistent momentum that really takes them to the next level. So, love what you're doing, man. This is good stuff.
This is good. I was just going to say, how long do I got you for?
Just probably a few more minutes, if that's cool. What else do you want to talk about?
Oh, it's good. Actually, then, I love it the way it is. I don't want to hold you too long. 3 going out questions. So first one, other than work, what have you been doing during these lockdown times to keep busy?
Well, I've been writing a book, and then as well as I've also been doing a lot of podcasting. So I've not been publishing the book yet. It's still in the back end. We're working on it, but it's just been a lot of things that it's close to my heart right now, and it'll probably be released in 2024, but also do a lot of podcasting, networking with a lot of people. And so those are several things that I've been doing and really focusing on, and as well, just a lot of content production right now, more brand awareness. So
awesome. So someone aspiring to be like you, successful businessman, awesome family person, what are some tips, tricks, or advice you'd give them to start down that path?
Well, one of the things is I always look at very simply, there's elementary, there's intermediate and expert. Okay. A lot of people definitely on YouTube and stuff like that, you'll find elementary stuff, right? How to make money? How do I do this? How do I do this? Right. And to me, it's like, it's very simple in my head, right? You go out there, you make a lot of money. Okay. Dial in a skill. You make a lot of money. Wonderful. You do that for a period of time. You live below your means. You have delayed gratification. Yes. We all want to make $100 bajillion. And yes, we all want to go and do other things, right? But live below your means. You do that consistently. Then you focus on intermediate stuff, which is what? Well, what I talked about, finding and dialing in those metrics, right? Understanding, okay, hey, you know what? I'm going to read a book a week or whatever it is, right? Fantastic, right? Now, why is that important? Because it doesn't mean that you're going to get everything from that book. You may get one or two, three things in that book, and then you implement that right away. That's one of the things that I've been really good at is, okay, hey, you read something, you learn something, you implement it right away. And then that's one of the things I would rather focus on is instead of someone reading 52 books in a year, read one book and implement everything that book says, right? That to me is more powerful. And then that's where the expert level, which is where, okay, now I'm able to, you know, have these skills, dial these skills in, learn these skills. Now I teach someone else. And that's where, you know, success versus significance. Success is, hey, I'm on the top of the mountain. Look at me. Significance is, hey, how many people can I bring to the top of the mountain with me? And that to me is more of an impact than anything else. But at the end of the day, you have to focus on yourself. You can't teach other people that that you have not gone to on those heights. So that's what I would suggest in that kind of, you know, phase one, phase two, phase three pattern.
That's awesome. No, that's essentially this whole summary of this episode, actually. So then where can everyone contact you at?
Yeah, you can reach out to me, you know, Christian D. Evans, that's my handle for everything. You can type that into Google. It's on YouTube, LinkedIn, Instagram. You know, I got podcasts, Christian D. Evans, or you can go to christiandevans.com, reach out to me. You can schedule a phone call, see if we're a good fit. It is an application process for our system. And then as well as, there are tons of resources out on YouTube and I interview a lot of podcasts. And so, yeah, Christian D. Evans, that would be the best way for anybody to reach out to me.
Perfect. It has been an absolute honor and a pleasure to talk with you today.
Hey, you too, man. And again, I really appreciate you being authentic and just sharing your story and, you know, being able to have that conversation and understand, like, obviously leveraging, you know, your strategy and understanding the marketing and being able to tell my story as well. So love what you're doing and just keep it up, bud. Thanks.
I will. Thank you.
Well, congratulations. You made it to the end. You're an awesome person. Not many make it here. So being the awesome person that you are, can you do me one more awesome favor? Can you rate and review this on whatever podcast services you're using? If you do it on Apple and you leave an actual written review, I have a thing on my website. I will take your written review and post it for all to see. Congratulations, you're permanently sealed on my site. Otherwise, I am trying to do YouTube more and live streaming. I will try to put as many of the YouTube links in the description of the show as I can. So give your boy some extra help over on YouTube. Watch my videos. I just mute it and change the channel, change the window or something. But yeah, that's it. Thank you for being awesome and see you next time.